Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of the Wall Street New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, speaking to you live from the studio here in Washington, D.C., Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings. Assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Alaikum salam, Brother Aziz. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, brother. Doing well.
All right. Welcome to another edition of our first show. Yes, indeed. So, 2024. If I'm not wrong, this is what, our 9th year or our 10th year?
I'm not proud of it. It's one of the two for sure. We've been on so long.
I look like, it's hard to keep up with them anymore. But in any case, we're here. And we're glad to be here. We won't say that we missed our last two shows, but that's because Blog wasn't operational. I've been on, I sent them several texts, but they told me around 2 o'clock today that they was up and ready. So I said, look like they're up and ready and look like we have a show tonight. So we have a show tonight. And, of course, Brother Aziz, we're going to continue to talk about the series of having our own bank. Because
very important, Brother Bilal, very important.
Indeed, so we can't have a cash flow that creates other businesses throughout our communities unless we're in control of our own monies. And so tonight we're going to continue talking about the importance of having our own bank. You and I both went down to the Department of Commerce, and we know that we as African Americans don't start being responsible for our own cash, there is no plans to ever put our money or any large amount of money in our communities. That thing that that law that was passed back in the early 50s, and that law of redlining, is still being practiced very heavily today, not only here in the United States, but every country of color in the world. So, but especially here in the United States, because we're not really in control of anything valuable. And that's something that this country will do everything, it seems. And the pity of it all is that we know our own federal government is our participants of keeping us without any kind of value in our communities. But the amount of monies that we that comes through our communities and go into these banks, if we was in control of our own money, we could go back doing what the black belt did during the time of Booker T. Washington and all of the his business planners. And we know one of those huge planners that worked with Booker T. And the black belt was the Greenwood Business District out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they was able to... create a time in the black community as to where our monies stayed in our communities for a period of no less than 4 months before it would start circulating on the outside of our communities. And we know today that because we don't have any businesses, that huge amount of money that come through our communities, especially our churches, only stay in our community for a period of 4 hours before it's into a Caucasian's bank. And once it goes to a Caucasian bank, the dispense of that money goes to the building of the values of Caucasian communities. Caucasians can walk into the banks and take all kinds of loans from the bank for just about anything, and especially when it comes to financing their businesses. You see all the car dealerships, all the huge retail stores, all the big real estate companies, all of them are getting a growth from the banks. The banks are buying all of the notes. And when I say notes, I'm talking about the applications and the credits. A person who will go into a car dealership and fill out an application to buy a car, and the car is sold to this person after whatever credit, after the application is filled out and a report is ran on the buyer. And if approved, the banks will buy the notes on that car. So car dealership sells the car for $50,000. And he's sending the application, sending the paperwork to the bank. The bank buys that $50,000 application and sends a car dealership $50,000. And then he'll send the buyer a balance due of $70,000 because they had to finance the car for until the buyer is able to pay it off. But you that $20,000 the bank made, and remember how many car dealerships sold cars just like that in that community. So you could be talking about a couple of hundred car dealerships. Each one of them is selling 10 or 15, 20 cars a day. You can see how many hundreds of millions of dollars is being made from the monies that the banks loan out to businesses. And but the monies that is being loaned out is just not white folks' money. Remember, black people made those deposits too, especially our huge churches. But again, when it comes to the distribution of those monies from the bank, black folks can't get their own monies to advance their own communities. Our monies don't do nothing but advance the communities of Caucasians, and it's been doing it ever since we've been here. That is a beginning example of what we will be talking about tonight when we say we must have our own banks. We cannot start a cash flow of our monies until we're in control of our own monies. And we can't be in control of our own monies if we're putting it into a bank, as to where once it goes into the bank, you have no way of controlling. They don't have you on the bank's board of directors. Ain't no black folks, even though your money is in that bank. You don't have any voice in the bank. You don't have no say as to how the money is going to be. And that's why we're being discriminated against, because we're being robbed. Ain't nothing but robbery. And so to get away from being robbed, we must start seeing that our money stop going into these white banks where they can take our monies and we don't have any say. So that's it. That's my opening conversation on this subject tonight, Brother Aziz.
I have a question to ask you. Brother Bilal.
I'm going to turn the conversation over to you anyway, so and you can start your comments by asking me or anybody else anything you want to, Brother Aziz.
All right. Thank you, Brother Bilal. My question was that you have experience as dealing with car sales and that automobile sales, and I'd like to know that if it's true or not that when you have the loan taken out and you're paying for your car, does the financial institution get their money before the loan's paid off, or do they get it along the way?
When the financial institution, which is
right,
the bank.
Right, the bank, you know. Mm-hmm.
Financial institution, what is the bank, they are buying the note, and remember the
right.
note is whatever the car sold for. So if the car
right.
sold $1,000, a car dealership is asking the bank, is this person approved? Once the bank said this person is approved, the car dealership now can send all of the paperwork to the bank. And then the $50,000 for what the car sold for, the bank sends the car dealership $50,000 immediately as soon as the transaction is completed. The car dealership now sends tell the buyer, who has gone to finance, he went through finance while he was at the car dealership, and the finance folks told him, say, okay, the car dealership bought your note. They're charging you $20,000 to finance the car. So $50,000 is what our cost is, and the bank's cost is $20,000 to finance. So you owe $70,000, and you have four
mm-hmm.
or 5 years to pay off that $70,000. And so... your question the bank has bought the note, and the bank pays the dealer, whether it's a car dealership, whether it's a retailer, whoever they bought the paper for. The banks pay the business establishment, and then the person who is financing has to pay the bank, and the bank put their fees on. And does that answer your question?
Well, yes, primarily. I was wondering if the financial fees that the bank put on, the interest charge, before the loan's paid off, do they make their money in interest? I know they're going to get paid the initial payment in that, but you know, we know that interest is there. And I was wondering, do they get that before the loan paid off, or is it wove all the way in down to the last payment, if you know that?
Well, again, in other words, the bank bank has sold the buyer how much they owe on the car when the car is purchased. So The dealer was selling the car for $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
But now the finance charges, the bank is saying they're financing it for $20,000. Now, what is any surcharges? Yeah, there could be surcharges because you might have late payments. You may have other things that will come up that will make that $20,000 stretchable into more monies. But if you pay everything on time, that contract that you originally signed with the bank, if it's for $70,000, and the bank say, okay, it's going to take you 4 years to pay back this $70,000, all the finance charges and everything like that has been included. That's how they come up with the $20,000, is the finance charges.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, yeah, that, yeah.
And you look at that, Brother Isaac, and our public that's listening, remember, that's just one deal.
Mm-hmm.
That same,
right. Yeah.
Same car dealership is selling 10 to 20 cars a day. And that's just one dealer. $20,000, and I got $20,000, and there's been 20 transactions from this one bank. So $20,000 times 20 is what the bank has made from this one car dealership. So you can see the bank is picking up, and this is just one car dealership. The bank might be picking up close to $1 million a day, or $500,000 a day, financing one car dealership. But let's say that there are, in your community, there's 50 to 100 car dealerships, and each one of them is selling this kind of paper every day. And we're just talking about car dealerships. The retail giants is the same. When you go into the retail places and you fill out your credit card, and I want to open an account to buy furniture, to buy this, to buy that, well, that's also finance, and the finance retailer is doing the same thing, taking your application, sending it to the bank. This is how much the price tag is, this much, but and so the bank buys it and add on their charges, and so that's what I mean about taking your monies. The bank takes your monies, our deposits, they take our deposits, and then they take those same deposits from us. And when I say from us, black folks, white folks, and others, but in this case, America is made up of black folks and white folks when it comes to our economy. That's who built it, black folks and white folks. And but the only thing is the white folks take all the monies and make deals off the monies that we all put in the bank, but all the money is paid from our monies into the white communities. The white communities don't put the monies back in the black communities. They only invest their monies in white communities. And like I said, a white person can go into the bank and get a loan for just about anything. The black man go into the bank, and it's impossible for him to get a loan for anything. The only thing he can get a loan for is where the banks can say, I'll sell you a car, I'll sell you something where we can make monies off of you. But giving you a loan as to where you can prosper, that's only for white folks. That's why we must put our monies in our own financial institutions as to where we can make decisions on how our monies is going to be dispensed back into our communities. We can create our own car dealerships. We can create our own real estate companies. We can create our own insurance companies. We can create whatever our monies is being created through the white banks. If we had control of our monies, we can buy and create the same thing. But, again, when it comes to racial discrimination, is one thing, but we're dealing with racial discrimination and highway robbery. And that's what we got to put a stop to, because there is no such thing. And even remember, even our rich white brothers, our rich brothers and sisters, Oprah Winfield, all of these black folks who got millions, and some say as much as $1 billion, well, guess where they put their monies?
Absolutely.
White banks, and guess who is growing from those billions of dollars that these our black millionaires are putting their monies? Is white. They love for black folks to become millionaires, because we're going to put our monies right. That's what I mean.
In their bank.
To white folks to get filthy rich, and they've been getting rich off of us over 500 years. That's why it's time that African Americans start putting together business plans, just like Booker T. Washington and the Black Belt Wall Street did. That's why they were so successful. The Black Belt Wall Street that built communities all the way from Texas throughout the South to include parts of New York and the Midwest. And something that we'll be talking about as we go along this year, history on Black Belt Wall Street. But tonight, it is so important, and we're going to keep on talking about this. We must have our own financial institutions. So, Brother Aziz, I think I took answering your questions. I didn't give you a chance to for your opening comment. I'm going to still go ahead and do that. Then we will open our mics up and go to our general public, especially some of our directors out there. Brother Aziz.
Yeah. Thank you, Brother Bilal, and thank you for answering that question and going in depth in it, into it. And my opening statement to our listeners is that in order to be successful, without a doubt, and have a good community life, we're going to have to take our finances and put them in a bank that's going to be good to us like we've been good to it. And what I mean is put our monies there, allow them to make money off of us, and in return, we get zero. Now, I think I would feel better giving it to somebody that was like me and I got zero than to give it to someone that wasn't like me and I got zero. And what I'm saying is, we need to start investing back into our community. As Brother Bilal had mentioned in his conversation, that a lot of our entertainers and our athletes make big money, and where do they put their money? We don't know if they're allowed to invest back into the community in terms of putting their money in a black bank. But we do know that if they were putting their money into black banks, whatever black bank they put it in, whether it was one or it was different ones that were throughout the United States, which is only 22 in existence today, but it would make a tremendous, tremendous change in our community, as well as monies being loaned out for families to get by, be able to buy a home. I mean, it would be a total different community life. So what we're going to keep stressing and talking about on our program, New Africa Black Belt, Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, is about investing in black banks. The largest black bank in America is called One United. And right now, it is suffering a little bit. It's lost some depositors. I was reading an article about that recently that they had lost some depositors. You know, people investing and taking the money other places at times. I'm presuming this was what it was about. But it wasn't a detailed article. But, you know, we do have African-American banks. There's 22 of them still in existence. And it's not one in every state. Now, I thought I was dealing with not a bank, but a credit union, which offers some of the same similar opportunities or services. However, both when it comes to your money being secure, both of them are insured up to $250,000. So that, they're the same. The services they offer may be a little bit different, but not that traumatic, not that traumatic of a difference. So what I'm going to say is I was dealing with Navy Federal Credit Union, which now I'm going to have to take a look into because I haven't read the details, but it's been alleged by a couple members of Navy Federal Credit Union, which I'm one, they have violations of racial discrimination against African Americans when it comes to buying homes. And supposedly they can prove it. So I want to look into that and keep us all posted about that. As Brother Bilal Brother Bilal assisted me in getting a car back in 2016, and I got it through Navy Federal Credit Union, which was something open to veterans primarily. And it was a pretty good transaction, fast and everything like that, for an automobile, which, as we all know, lose their value, rapidly and over a period of time. So it was money made there by everybody else. And at the end of the deal, if I take care of my car, I'll get some more use out of it. But the value of it, I lost the value of it from the time I left. But my point is, Navy Federal Credit Union, it has to be looked into. But we do have one federal credit union that we know of in the Washington area, and that's called Andrews Federal Credit Union. And this federal credit union is over 51% owned by African Americans. And we do know in this metropolitan area, Washington, D.C., that that financial institution itself, Navy Federal Credit Union, Andrews Federal Credit Union, they do have a lot of African-American depositors there that we could visibly see because of the location where one of their larger branches is. Over in the area we know as Clinton, Maryland. But, my point is what we're going to be talking about all year long is putting these monies into these African-American institutions. And we're going to be contacting some of these African-American institutions to let you, our listeners, know just how they're doing. Even though they may not be in your state and we understand if they're not in your state, there is one other a banking institution that is a online banking institution. And if you really do your finances, paying your bills and things like that, you do go through a bank, online primarily. We don't go in and pay our bills in cash to nowhere nowadays. And after a while, you won't be able to pay in cash when you're paying a bill. But What we're saying is that we know for a fact that this one bank is called Greenwood, and they offer online services, and you can bank with them. It's just online banking. and that's an African American bank, and it's owned by I don't remember right off the bat, but you know it's Greenwood Bank, and it's an African American owned bank, and it's owned by I wanted to say a civil rights activist. I don't think it's Andrew Young, maybe something like that, and a couple athletes. But please, our listeners, look that up, Greenwood Banking, and I'll look it up again to be sure you give that accurate information. But my point is, so that's another African-American institution that you can do online banking through. And, well, see what their services are. They offer you banking and ATM services throughout the country. So it's not like you limited it to one place. You know, because we know big banks like Nationwide, Bank of America, and Truist, some of the other big banks like that, their services are Wells Fargo. Is all over the country, and when you use them, and you're out of that service, you're not one of the members. Well, you're going to charge a $3 service charge, but it's most of the time one of their outlets for you going to an ATM and getting you some money is somewhere convenient. So, when we look into some of these African American institutions and see what type of ATM services they offer you, and can you go to ATMs in the locality where you are and draw money without a cost? But at the same time, the more we invest in African-American banks as well as credit unions, the more and more it's going to allow them to be able to offer a number of the services the big boys offer. I mean, it's a simple mathematics. The more depositors you have in your bank, the more you can do, the bank can do when it comes to financial dealings. And as Brother Bilal say, the European Caucasian banks, they're primarily going to loan that money into the upkeep of the Caucasian neighborhoods and not over there in what they call the low-income neighborhoods, wherein the highways, everything is neglected. We put our monies in those banks that are over there in those so-called low-income neighborhoods. But that daggum bank over there, low-income neighborhood, if you were to go check them out, I bet you they haven't loaned nobody in that low-income area money to make a home improvement. It's like, they don't loan you no money, and in Washington, D.C. is an excellent case of that, and probably all other major cities around the country. One point, Washington, D.C. back in the 70s, in the late 60s, we're talking about 69, 68, and on into the 70s, Washington, D.C. had some properties where they were totally neglected and abandoned. Nice, beautiful three-story homes, colonial-built homes, and the African-Americans couldn't get no money to upgrade where they were living, so they just a lot of them abandoned these places. So D.C. came out with a program wherein they were selling houses for a dollar, and you had to get on a list, and then you had to get the money to be able to rehabilitate these places that you will buy. Well, all the downtown houses that were abandoned in Washington, D.C., all of those were sold to Caucasians. And they had the money to renovate them. They got the money to bank to renovate them because they knew that once those places were renovated, the value of them was going to skyrocket out of this world. Today, you can't buy none of them for sure under $1.5 million, any of them. And the bigger they are, the more it is. So these are the type of opportunities that our people miss out on because We don't have African-American financial institutions either where we are or we are not investing in them where they can invest like that, because they won't lose once they take up the note of, you know, your home. They got the deed on your property, and if you don't pay them, you're getting a lien. So it's the same thing the big boys do, the bigger financial institutions. So my point is, if there are those black African-American banks in your community, it's your duty to go and invest in them and not continue to carry on. Because and one of the big reasons why a lot of us don't invest in African-American banks or aren't concerned about it, even though we know we can't get money from this bank to get something, because they say our credit ain't up to par. You don't know what we have. We have research been done, I know, by Howard University, and we had some years ago research done on African Americans with the same credit history, with the same good credit, applying for homes and that, and overwhelmingly, it was like 10-1 that they were denied loans before white folks got them. White folks got them every time. An African American with that kind of credit was still turned down. So you can imagine, if you don't have A1 credit, as they call it, you'll get nowhere. There's no such thing when you want to buy a home and somebody, even though you might not have what they call the best credit rate, there's no such thing as you as African American. They're giving you a chance. A chance, you know, that you may not fall on a loan and nothing like that. You might keep it up. I'm going to invest in you. We don't have those type of privileges offered to us like that. So that's one of the real good reasons. Everybody wants to have a home. And if they don't, a lot of the younger folks start out with a condo. And then some folks like to have a townhome, a townhouse. So all of these benefits come along when we are investing in African-American banks, and they're listening, and the management there is listening and thanking us for putting our money with them, helping them grow. And in return, they give back to the community. So we're going to be talking about this all year long. And we hope that the impact of this will get to a number of our people, and they grow out of that mentality of not wanting to put monies and invest in African-American institutions. If you're investing in a bank right now and it's not a black bank and they're giving you all you want, great. But we are pretty sure that you got to go through a rigorous background check in order to get any money out there. And if you don't have any money on file with them in a savings or something, I don't think they're going to take a risk on you. They're not going to take a risk on you like that, even though you may have been on your job a number of years. And again, somebody, institution that will give you a better shot at it would be a credit union. The credit unions will loan you money much quicker than a bank. So, again, we have a lot of African-American, we have African-American churches that have credit unions, and they get their loans to buy homes, to get their mortgage insurance, to buy cars. And some of them just get loans to help the child get a start, the children get a start maybe going to college. So to all our listeners, remember, if you have the opportunity, think about this and follow through on it. Find a way that you can invest in an African-American institution, financial institution, a bank, or a credit union. And for the services that you may get, I'm pretty sure most of our African-American banks, as well as credit unions, will offer them to you. And if you owe it to yourself to do this, and help with the cause, because we're all in this together as African-American people. Even though some of us may make more money than the other and be living in a better place, in a better position in life, believe me, in the final result, you're not going to be looked at any different than you are as an African-American who has a little money. And I, as a Caucasian, would be glad to accommodate you any kind of way it is to get you to put your money in my bank and do whatever. Because I know you ain't going to really ask me for much or anything. You just want to put your money in my bank because you think I'm going to do you well. So these are the type of things we're up against. And my brothers and sisters, wherever you may be, whatever state you're in, or outside of the country, remember that, you know, invest in financial institutions that are going to treat you right. And in this case, because of what our program is about, we're going to be talking about investing in African-American institutions. So, Brother Bilal, that's kind of like me starting out. You know, I did want to say that I'd be remiss, brother, if I didn't. I'm going off track a little bit, and you know, I'm very upset at what's happening with the war that's going on over in Palestine, and how it's having a big effect on the people back here in the United States, because this First Amendment of freedom of speech and all of that. We see that's not so. We see in America, we got people that are presidents of high institutions of learning, and they're getting asked to resign. It's like you can't say anything about that war and say that you think that the war, the Palestinian, you support the Palestinians, and you think that what's going on over there, the way the Israelites are treating those people and bombing them, you know, the United States shouldn't be supporting nothing like that. But our government is, and when people that are in certain jobs, in certain positions, their constitutional rights are violated. You know, if they say something about it, they lose their job. And we've seen this here, not just on TV and the newspapers, on the radio, about different people. The president of Harvard, the first African-American woman, she hasn't been there 6 months. And because she made some statements about what was going on, the Jews, they're calling for her resignation. And then they rescinded the call for the resignation. And the sister decided that since, you know, it was so volatile there, you know, with people that were alumni of Harvard and, you know, donating money, they were saying they were going to withdraw their funds if she didn't leave. So she left with that in mind, that she didn't want to cause the school that get damaged because of statements she thought she had the freedom to say or speak out about, and not in a negative way whatsoever, just to speak out about how she felt about what was going on there and what she felt was wrong. So when we as Americans start getting in that position and have to fear for our jobs, or our life being threatened because we voice our opinion, that's another reason why we have to unite financially. Because when the Black Wall Street in Tulsa existed, the same people that hated those people, our people, and that, they came to our people in need. They needed finances to move their cattle operations, to do certain things, to dig for oil wells, all types of stuff. They had to come. They came. That's why a lie was formed and then it came and just destroyed our community with no opposition except us, our people there are fighting, you know, to preserve their own property and that. But when you got the whole town, the government against you helping with that, you know, so these, that's another reason why we have to invest with one another. It's a big need. We see them giving money, our government giving money to all these European countries to help aid them. They've given reparations to the Japanese as well as some other people. And the ones that is in the part of the Constitution that was supposed to get, you know, get some justice, African Americans haven't gotten nothing. We give. And all we're talking about, we have to change our mindset. We've got to change the way we think, because if we don't, our children is going to be in worse condition. They have nothing to look forward to. When they go to financial institutions 30, 20 years from now, if we don't have things set up for them to be able to look forward to be getting some help there, then they're going to get some help from somebody that's going to help themselves first. And that's understandable. It's understandable for any group of people to want to take care of themselves before they start reaching out to help others. They're going to make sure that in their own community that there's no suffering there. And that's what we need to do. That's how you invest in your community before we reach out and put our monies in other banks where we know they're going to look out for their communities, i.e. the white folks. So it's more than a need. And, you know, if our people wasn't afraid, our so-called leaders in whatever position, especially our ministers, Christian ministers, they shouldn't have the fear to tell people that that's what they need to invest in African-American bank. They're sitting up there with a complete black church just scared to tell their people what to do. You know, the only slave any of us should be to is the creator of the heavens and the earth, whatever name you call him. That's who you should be a slave to, not to this material world or other people and their crazy beliefs. So we, again, invest in ourselves. We're not making weapons and guns and things to kill one another with. We want to take those monies to build homes, build businesses, support brothers and sisters that have great ideas that could go on the business and do real well. Those are the type of things that we're talking about supporting when you invest in an African-American bank or African-American financial institution. So again, you know, this is what New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, this is what we're going to be talking about every time we meet. We may have different things we talk about, but this is going to be woven in every time we talk about investing in African-American institutions. And we'll start bringing back some information about some of these 22 African-American banks as credit unions that exist, and some updated information on them. So that's what I've got to start out talking about now, and hopefully we can say something about what's going on to our government about that war that's going on, and not be afraid to say what you want to say. You know, Palestine, what, you know, used to be a country called Palestine. They had a right to defend themselves, but they couldn't. So it looked like it's no more a country called Palestine. So now we're hearing about Israel got a right to defend itself. So it's lopsided there. So I'm saying, voice your opinion if you don't like that, and let our government know that we need to change what we're doing. concern in that war, and you know, turn and not support and give weapons of mass destruction for other governments to do that to other people, period. People, period. Human beings. So, Brother Bilal, that's what I have to say starting out, especially about investing in our communities, brother.
Well, let's stay on that topic, please, because that's what is the that's what have us on life support, is that our community is dying out, and this is happening right here in the United States. So when we start, I mean, it's always good to be sympathetic towards all the dangers that's going on in the world, but there are dangers going on right here in our black communities, and those dangers are economics. When you you were saying something about the black poor communities is being overlooked. No, the black, there is no such thing as a black low-income communities. When you have African Americans depositing over $1 trillion a year into the banks all over this country, when you have the strongest, largest business institution in the African American community, and that is our churches. Our churches are the monies that is making white folks filthy rich, because, again, the hundreds of billions of dollars that our charity monies are being put into the churches. Of course, many African Americans will say, our preachers get this and our preachers get that. But our preachers cannot take on or take the large amount of hundreds of billions of dollars. That's too much money even for all of our preachers to stuff, wherever they may want to stuff their monies. They can't stuff that kind of monies. They can stuff as much monies as they want to stuff, and they haven't touched the hundreds of billions of dollars. And annually, look like it's coming up to more than $1 trillion that we are depositing into Caucasian's banks. Now you figure.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
If we are,
all right.
If we are contributing that amount of monies and deposits, like I was saying earlier, and the banks go out here with our monies and with white folks' monies and everybody else's monies and start building the white communities by putting a cash flow into the white communities, and they do that by building up not only business establishments, but establishments, any kind of establishment they want in their communities, they have the monies to do so, because all the monies that go into the white banks is distributed back to white folks. Like I said, we as black folks, the only monies we can pull out is the monies that we make a deposit, but all of a sudden I'm going to take a few dollars out and buy grocery to pay my bills. But the rest of your monies is still in the bank. And as every day your monies is in the bank, every day the monies is making monies. And this monies that the banks are making is appreciating everybody but black folks. But it's your monies. And that's what I meant, and that's what we meant when we was at the Department of Commerce. And the SBA was saying reasons why we can't get grants and monies for businesses is because of our of mistakes we make on our applications. But at the same time, all of those banks that sponsored the SBA, those same banks are the ones that have our deposits. So if we can't get monies for the development of our own communities with our own monies that are deposited into the banks, then what are they doing with our monies when they deny us and say we don't qualify, but yet still they have our monies? And the question that we asked while we was at the Department of Commerce, we asked, what are you doing with our monies? Are you putting it into a special escrow? As to where,
right,
when we do qualify for our monies, you got those trillions of dollars sitting there waiting on us. What are you doing with our monies? And we know what they're doing with the monies. They are advancing their communities with our monies. And if you look at the black communities, because we don't have our own banks have our monies and to dispense of our monies, then the eagle, as they say, that is flying, is only flying into white communities. She doesn't cross over into the black communities and do any flying. So with that said, we're going to go through our open mics now. We're going to ask for our general audience. We're going to ask for their participation, and because that's what's going to count is what is our general audience, what is our communities going to do about this? Because collectively, if we decide that we're going to stop putting our huge amount of monies, especially that huge amount of monies that go through our churches, and start putting that huge amount of monies back into our own communities, as to where that huge amount of money is, where the eagle can fly now. And the eagle is flying because it's creating new businesses. Remember, we can open all the banks we want to open, but if the bank is not creating assets, the bank ain't doing nothing unless it's creating assets. And how does a bank create assets? They take your deposits, and then after they take your deposits, they want you to come in and say, I want monies to open a farm. I want monies to open a car dealership. I want monies to open a housing development. I want monies to open a medical facilities. Whatever it takes that you need monies in your communities to develop your communities, that's where the eagle is flying. But it's not going to fly in your communities unless you're in control of your cash. And with that said, I am going to go to the open mics. But before I go to the open mics, I want to greet all of our state managers. And so let me see what state managers we have on here. Anyone? Brother Rashid out of Delaware, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum to you and Brother Aziz. I'm here.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. How are you doing, Brother Rashid? Brother Rashid,
doing well.
We welcome you. Any comments that you might have?
Well, in listening to everything that both you and Brother Aziz have been discussing, you know, one of the things that really hit my mind, especially as he was talking about there are 22 black-owned banks in the U.S., as we know, not all of us will have them in our cities or our states. One of the things I was looking at being here in Delaware, I remember on one of the last broadcasts, he mentioned a couple of locations near me. I want to say Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Maryland have some black-owned banks that I definitely want to get with him on. And one of the things I was just thinking about, Brother Aziz and Brother Bilal, was something that we as a people need to think about, because I always say this, that for us not to make the most money, we are the biggest spenders. We're the biggest consumers. And one of the things I think would easily jumpstart us easing into putting our finances into black-owned financial institutions would be the 10% mindset to take, you know, millionaires and rich dad, poor dad, and people I know who are very wealthy always pay themselves first. And, you know, if they get a $2,000 check, they're going to take 10% off the top and put it in their account before they pay anybody else any of that money. So one of the things I want to put on our minds to start out, it's a way to start out lightly, but at the same time with a millionaire mindset, is why not we start out taking 10% of whatever we make, whether it's your monthly check for some people who are on fixed incomes or from people who get paid weekly, get paid biweekly, et cetera, commission checks, et cetera. Why don't we take on the mindset to start taking just 10% of every time we make money and put it in a black-owned bank, a black-owned financial institution? And you will be drastically amazed if you forget about that 10% and just treat it as though it is not a part of your finances. Not only how quickly that would add up, but just think, as you were mentioning, Brother Bilal, that was just one car lot. But now we're talking about several thousands and even, you know, millions of people doing this across the United States. I believe it would have an immediate impact on all of the black-owned banks and financial institutions and get us on the right track, if you will, of recreating, you know, Black Belt Wall Street as it was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in the early 1900s.
Thank you, Brother Rasheed. Wonderful comments, yeah. And you were right on point. I got all the mics open, so any of our directors, I'm going to ask you to just come on and let us know that you're out there. Sister Aisha, out of North Carolina, are you with us? Okay, Sister Aisha is not with us. Any of our other state directors, are you with us? Whose names I haven't called. Anybody out of Oklahoma? Okay, then in that case, our mics now are open then to any of our other listeners. We're talking about banking and the importance of having our own financial institutions as to where our financial institutions can start, our monies can start going towards the industrialization of our own communities rather than having them to continue to be deposited into the Caucasian's banks, and the industrialization only goes to, as we know, the Caucasian community, and that's been going on for, like I said, hundreds of years. So our mics are open. We welcome your comment on this subject. Our mics are open.
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Assalamu alaikum, salam. You.
Yes, sir. Everything is everything. I'm hanging in here. All praise be to the Creator. He's brought us this far,
yes.
And he's given us a mindset to continue. You know, we're looking at another new year, another new opportunity, because I'm going to try to live by the old folks used to say, peace be still. I'm going to try to live by that, because if it's one thing that I can hope for or share with the community, is that it's some ugly, ugly things going on in the world these days. You know, they spoke about when we were children about being weaker and wiser. It's upon us. So to keep from being caught up in a whole lot of mess, because we don't even protest the way we used to. Now when you get a protest going, you got these people that infiltrate. And they've got ways of infiltrating today that they didn't have, say, years ago. They got masks and things that make them look just as black as you and me. So they have ways of infiltrating. So I'm going to say that my words would be for 24, would be peace be still to all my sisters and brothers. Because we need to watch. They say watch as well as pray. It's time for us to sit back and start watching and letting other people do what they're doing, because this thing is totally out of control. Nothing
you see,
the truth doesn't seem like the truth, and lies are what's taking the place of truthfulness. So you know already what you're dealing with. So when we get started working on our communities and building our communities with our banks and things of this nature, let's do a thorough search of who we're dealing with. Because like they say, all skin folk are kin folk. So we got to watch our own as well as watch others. So I'm just going to say, brothers and sisters, peace be still. And let us watch and see what's going on with people before we start trusting them too much. Because that's one of our downfalls. We like to share too much information, and we share our information for free. You're not going to get anything free from that Caucasian. Just like, when we were children, they had what they call handymen. Well, those same handymen today are called journeymen. And you're not going to get a journeyman, apprentice, or any of the rest of them to come to your home to repair your washer, dryer, electricity, plumbing, or anything for a bottle of liquor and a couple of dollars. Those days are forever gone. You call them today, it's going to be cash money. So it was a time when the handymen came and you paid them a little something. But today, you pay those journeymen and you pay them well. So I would say that we've got to stop giving our stuff away for free because we've been discounted. And when you're on the discount table too long, you become a discount. So we got to get off the discount table. We got to get our own worth. We got to study our worth. What are we? We know that we're worth trillions because we put trillions into the economy year after year, but they treat our dollar as if it's of no concern and no account. But at the same time, when they're ready to do a business, what's the first community usually they come to? Because they're not going to go into those people's community doing a whole lot of business. So they come to our communities and do a very well living. So, no, we're not as poor as we think we are. You know, we got to start reading that book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. If you get this book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, that book can explain a whole lot of things that we have experienced and are still experiencing. Because if you think about it, we haven't really come that far. They still treating us like second-rate, second-class citizens. So we got to work on self. Work on self. And while we're peace be still, let's work on self. That's my advice to my community for this evening. Thank you for your time. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you.
How y'all doing this evening? I would like to comment on something about the churches. I think our churches have a lot of responsibility. Where I live, there are churches on every single, like, there's a church on almost every block. And every church, they belong to a different association, or they're part of an association, or they're a bishop, or they're this or that, or whatever. So each association, if people come to church every single Sunday. Sunday after Sunday, the churches are falling apart. People are not coming to the churches as they used to. But when the churches were full, you had a full church. But a church could also, that's a body of people
despite the fact that he was so
I'm not talking about a body of Christ. I'm just saying a body of people who are giving money to an organization or a report, or they're giving money. So that's a body of people. Why they don't have
Control
they are a body of people who can get health care because they all are part. They're part of a church. They're all part of a nonprofit. They all are under the nonprofit. They should be able to get health care for all of their members. Why they don't have and get health care for all of their members? That's number one. I don't understand that. That's just I don't get that. You're a member of a church. Why doesn't your pastor or your organization give you health care if you don't have any, and they can do that. They don't, but I'll leave that alone. Now, as far as the banks are concerned, I'm not understanding why. I'm listening to a TV. I heard TV. Somebody put everybody put the mute on because I want to hear TV. Everybody
put on if you're not speaking. Please put your mute on. Go right ahead, brother. Sounds like we have that cooperation. Go right ahead.
Oh, can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes.
So, I don't know if y'all heard what I was saying about the churches and having
churches. Go right ahead.
So, with that being said. Now, with the churches and them, they're depositing their funds into a bank. Why are if all of the African-American churches deposit their funds, like I think that some brothers said that earlier, if the African-American churches deposit their funds to African-American banks, like we used to, and we did in the 30s. There were African-American banks in the 30s, because there was one in my community. There was one in the community that I lived in. There was an African-American bank. So we stopped depositing our money in African-American banks because we did some foul things back in the day. We're more educated now. There's FDIC now. We're more educated now where we won't do the things that we did to one another back then. And people were stealing. We're doing things to one another back then. I'm not going there. I'm just saying that we did. And people were – there was just a lot of shady things. We're more educated now. We know what's going on now. We have people who are financiers, and we have more educated people who can take care of our money, and we have people who are depositing money and who are pastors, and we're more educated now than we were then when people were stealing our money. White folks were stealing our money because they took. Hello.
Hello.
Right,
is this our cousin Damien?
No. Let the brother Go right ahead, brother.
They were stealing our money then, because you know they were stealing our money, and then we were stealing. You know, there was a lot of things going on back in the 40s, and it was a lot of things. You know, you used to take your, you know, back in the day, you used to take your TV to the shop. And, you know, you take it to the shop, and then, you know, we did some things to ourselves in our own community back then. I grew up in the city, so, you know, in the city, we did a lot of stuff to ourselves, and that's why, and then, now our stores and stuff, they closed because we went to the mall, because we weren't doing things right. But now this is 60, 70 years later. And those 70 years ago, we were still living in the same houses 20. This is a different time now. So in this time, especially in the city, if you lived in the city in the 1960s, in 1970s, those houses and stuff were built in the 1920s. There was no revitalization. Nobody was revitalized enough. So it didn't matter how much money you were making. You were, oh, okay, so this is a nice little house over here, so we'll move over here, just right around the corner. So the whole housing thing didn't come to the 70s, but we still had to sue the banks to get our money. Just to buy a house. That just came in the 70s. And then in the 80s, they were still struggling to get our house. We were still struggling to buy a house. Even with making money,
right,
we were still struggling to buy a house.
Yeah.
They still wasn't giving us loans to buy a house. So what I'm saying is even then, even in the 80s, when the churches were full, in the 80s, John B. Key and the churches were full packed. If we had started our banks then, we would have a problem today. But today our churches are empty and the banks are full. And it's because we've been blessed from the 80s. And the 80s with the banks, we fought and all that. We fought, but we didn't fight for what we didn't fight for what our ownership of ourselves. We're still coming from slavery. We were still struggling from slavery. We still asking for just give us something. We still asking that stuff for my cousin. But we were still asking for our peace. But there were some of us who said, No. I don't want a peace. I want mine. And I'm gonna do mine for myself. And there was some of us who said, no, I'm getting mine because I know what's mine, and I'm getting mine. And on the East Coast, there was only a couple. And one of the ones y'all talking to is one of those couples. You know what I'm saying? So I'm telling the truth. I'm just telling the truth. And so now here we are 50 years later, 40 years later, and there now the churches are gone. Ain't nobody in there to say what we're saying now because the churches are, the memberships have depleted. When we had enough people in the 80s to build a bank, to invest in a bank. You had 400 people in the pews. My church alone had three services. All this money. And where did we take the money? We took it to the white bank. But even now, the white bank took all of our money, they took all of our money and we got a chance to build an extra hall. We had our building fund, and when we had the building fund, we still had to beg for money.
Yeah.
From the bank, with all these members, you have 3,000 people guaranteed for a loan. Why you gotta beg? And 3,000 people who've been continuously in a church pack, and you have to beg a bank to give you a loan to add on a little small piece of your church. Well, maybe it's done. Well, maybe it was a whole lot of things going on. But now, today, you have church associations. Not everybody is more educated. You have church associations. You have the American Baptist. You have this. You have the Pentecostal. You have the Apostles. You have the Worldwide Church of God. You have all of these churches, and all of them are still giving their money to the same thing. So why not talk to these congregations and these, or not the congregation, because you don't go to the congregation. You don't go to the church. You go to the church association that belongs to the church, because the association has like 10 churches. It may have 50 churches. So the church association is the one you talk to and say, hey, why are you giving all your money to a bank? You talk to them and say, why are you giving all your money to a bank? Why don't you start your own bank? So what I want, my question is, when you have that power to do these things, why does the FDC do something, or they're discriminatory towards African Americans starting things like that? That's my question. If an African American starts doing those type of movements and start doing those things within the African American church and starting banks, will the FDIC start looking at that as a threat? That's my question.
Okay. Anyone want to answer or try to tackle that question?
I would, brother. And first, let me state, man, I was listening to everything you said. Eloquently stated. I do believe, I mean, if you look at history, our history in this country, any one or any organization that has ever tried to uplift our people has either been killed or assassinated literally or figuratively, whether it's character, whether it's whatever it may be. I think initially, as long as it doesn't take wings, they would probably let it go look like something that is something they would want to do. But I think that if we committed to it as a people, as you stated, brother, if the many church congregations did do that, one, I mean, look at how much money it would take out of the white bank. And for those churches that now have their money in white banks, imagine what kind of incentives or incentives they would give, great incentives for them to stay with their banks. But I do believe it would become a threat because, if you, like I said, I'm a student of history, and if you look at anybody from Marcus Garvey to the Black Panthers to Stokely Carmichael, any – body who has ever tried to uplift and help black people become better, become less dependent and more independent, those people were always demonized. And any group that is going to try to do anything to uplift black people in some shape, form, or fashion will become, in my opinion, demonized. And the sad reality, my brother, if we look at history, if they always use one of us to do what they want to do, and it's always many of us willing to destroy ourselves for whatever incentive they may give us. And that's the unfortunate reality. The sister was mentioning a book about post-traumatic slave syndrome. The mindset of us as a people has got to change just for us to do business with one another. Because I always say this, we have the mindset that, let's say if you're a business owner, the first thing your people who look like you come and ask you when they come to your business is for a hookup. Can I get a discount? But we don't ask Walmart, Target, Amazon. We don't ask nobody else for discounts. But when you own a business, that's the first thing we do. The second thing dealing with that mindset is the minute we have a negative customer service experience, now we say that's why I don't deal with black people. But if a white mechanic messed our car up, we'll take it to another white mechanic to fix it. If a white dentist messed our tooth up or our mouth up, we'd go to another white dentist to correct it. But we do not show each other those same courtesies. Just like Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, he never would have slapped Adam Sandler or Jimmy Kimmel for saying that joke. He wouldn't have even walked up.
Right.
So what has to happen, as you so eloquently stated,
yeah.
we have to have the confidence and the willingness to get off the training wheels and to get off our mother's breast. And that's
well,
been a milk
yeah,
we've
I
been drinking
that,
for
brother, but I understand that. But the only difference between what I'm saying in your analogy is that you're talking about people who are for profit. What I'm speaking about is nonprofit organizations. And in nonprofit organizations, you don't have that. You don't have any of that. So with the nonprofit organization, which are churches, then the only thing that churches are afraid of is that they will be taxed. And then so when you start, the fear is for churches is that they're afraid that they will be taxed, which won't happen. So when you talk about, when you compare it to those other analogies, it doesn't fit when it comes to churches. So when you talk about, that's why churches always stood up with the non-violence and all of that's why the churches always stood up, because churches never were afraid. You can't attack a church. So that's why churches always have to stand up. You have to come from the church. The church is what starts the organization. The church is what starts not a protest. The church is what starts not organizing. The church is what starts not confronting, none of that. The church, all the church is doing is starting a nonprofit organization. And there are a lot of banks that are nonprofit organizations. And it's not a savings loan, because the first thing they would do is they would try to say, well, you're trying to start a savings. No, it's not. It is a bank. And you can start. So, I'm going out of my zone here, but we're not talking about something. We're talking about churches, which is nonprofit. So you're not talking about anything for profit. You know,
no, I'm with
you're
you
not
there,
talking about profit.
My point is the mindset, even if you take it, and let's say you have black banks that offer that same nonprofit. My point is the mindset, I'm telling you, I believe looking at the history of this country and how things work, that those very people who are support or helping our black churches with the nonprofits now, if you had a black organization that was offering the same thing, they would have them so afraid to do it, or that's not going to be stable, or the mindset again is what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is
we're not as ignorant as we were in the 1950s. We are not as afraid as we were in the 1950s. We're more educated than we were then. Harvard just fired a black president. I mean, I'm quite sure, you know, she was like, oh, no, y'all can do this. I mean, we have black judges. We are further ahead now than we were in the 1950s. We're not as, you know, we're not in the same place. We have come much further than to jump at those type of scenarios and those, you know, innuendos. We don't, you know, they can say, but the thing about it is now, where we are now, when they say these things, they will have to come and say them with some type of evidence. They will have to say them with some type of precedence. They will have to say them with some type of and then we will have to do that before the laws change with any kind of actions we can do if African Americans are minorities, because we're not going to have them for long. So the time to do it is now. So if you wait too long, we won't have them. So you have to do them now, then later. And there's a such things and grandfathered in. And them being grandfathered in is the same thing as the Voting Rights Act, because, you know, we have to, they have to vote on the Voting Rights Act for us to still get our voting rights. You know, we still vote. So just like that, we still, so it doesn't matter how you get what you get when you get it. And so, and right now, while we have a tongue to get what we get when we can get it, we need to get what we get when we can get it. It doesn't matter what they think or how they want to react. So I'm just saying that. That's all I have to say.
Hello? We're discussing the churches, but we're not limited to just because, you know, you were saying in the 50s and how we're so much more educated today. But I can recall, because as a child growing up in the 50s, that's when we had most of our businesses. See, we're talking about businesses, business ownership, being entrepreneurs, operating our own businesses. And that's something that segregation, or should I say desegregation, robbed us. Stripped us of an opportunity to operate businesses in our own communities, and we're looking at how we can get that started or restarted or jump started again.
Precisely.
Get it back.
Precisely.
Get that back with no fear.
I was about to say, my brother, I hear you 100, man. I think the biggest thing, I do agree with you, we are more intelligent people. We have more degrees. But if you look at the wealth gap from slavery to now, the wealth gap is no different. It's the same percentage.
I'm not saying
that for us to argue. I'm just saying, go back and do the research and look at it.
Hold on.
No, I'm saying the wealth gap. If you look at as a people, as a whole, I'm not talking about, you know, you got one or two individuals making big. I'm saying, look at the people as a whole, from now and go back however far you want to look at. The wealth gap hasn't really changed that much. It has not. And my thing is, I agree with you. I mean, I think we should do all of the things you're mentioning. My only thing is, I think that if churches do it. And there's still corruption in churches. There are still people who are more about themselves than the whole village. That is 95% of our problem right now as a people. It's still about, in Africa, we were more about us, the village. In the United States, we've adapted the mindset of me and I. And until that changes, I think we will continue to see what we're seeing. But I think it can be done. The question is, our mindset has to change in order to do it.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying, brother. And when I say, let me clear, before you say that, when I say churches, I mean churches, synagogues, mosques. So go ahead, brother.
Okay. We're going to move right along, brothers. Like you said, this conversation tonight, it's going to be a continuing conversation because it's so important. We cannot build our community until we get our cash flow in order. And in order to get our cash flow in order, we have to be the ones that put together whatever business plan needs to be put together in order to go forward. Now, with that said, I'm running on the time of our national director, Sister Aisha. Sister Aisha, did you come on yet? Okay, Sister Aisha is not with us tonight, so we will just continue. I want to go back and where we just left off, but the original question was the FDIC. And why isn't it the FDIC? I think Brother Damien, you was asking, why is it that the FDIC isn't doing more, I think I understood you to ask, than what they're doing?
Is it Is the FDIC discriminatory towards black people opening banks, or is there that part? It's not towards
okay.
it, but just that whole thing.
Okay, let's go back. Let's go back in history, and I'm saying we can really go back in history to answer your question. Sister Williams, Sister Williams started out, but when you start saying, is the FDIC, which is the federal government, a part of the federal government, why aren't they more responsible and are they discriminatory? Remember, after World War II and that huge war we had to fight in the Pacific and in Germany, we came through that war, millions died. But we made it through that war, and we made it through that war victoriously as to where we could keep our democracy and the United States going. Well, now that we have victoriously won our democracy and we can keep our ways of life going, the federal government tells America, veterans who are responsible for keeping this democracy going, they tell them how appreciative they are for being victoriously, and even though there was a huge amount of lives lost, that we came back victoriously. So the federal government is telling our veterans that we want to become vested with our veterans who have kept our democracy going as a country. And to show our appreciations, we're going to become vested with all of our veterans. And the way we're going to do this, we're going to start the Veterans Housing Association. And by starting the Veterans Housing Association, this is going to allow veterans to have homes, to get into homes, not only homes that you already own, but homes that the federal government is going to start building new, brand new communities. One of those first communities that was built was New Rochelle, New York. That didn't exist until after World War II. It was the woods. And they cleared that woods, and they made that city. And today, New Rochelle is one of the most prosperous cities in America,
yeah.
And where most of your affluent
yeah.
white folks live today.
Yeah. I wanted to go to Fordham University.
Let me finish. And the federal government is creating these homes, and homes bring about equity. You want to be able to have equity, then own a house, and the house you bought this year for $30,000, that's what the homes was going for back in those days, the average house. You bought a house for $30,000, will afford it next year. That $30,000 house that you bought, equity has gone up in it. The house is worth $40,000. That house just made $10,000 for you. And so now you as a veteran can take your equity of 10, maybe you've been in the house 2 or 3 years, but 10, 20, whatever equity you have in your home, that equity now can be used whatever way you want to use it. All veterans had this financial opportunity, all but black veterans. Black veterans was denied the federal home and to participate in the federal homes. And the federal government said that is the ones who impose these restrictions on the black veterans and the black community by saying that these veterans, these black veterans, their homes and their black communities had no equity values. Therefore, you couldn't the black communities couldn't get home loans during the 50s, and even right up until 1965, black homes couldn't get any kind of equity values, and therefore, the white veterans who had equity in their homes, they were able to take their equity, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, whatever they had built up in the homes, and now they could go out and buy a business. And now they have a house and a business from the GI Bill. But the black veterans, nothing, because he was in value and his community was in value. That was called redlining. And that's how redlining was started. And it was a bill that was passed in Congress back in the 50s. Redlining still goes on today. It was never taken out of law. That's why no financial institutions have moved into black communities because of redlining. And who controls the redlining? Is banks and financial institutions. That's why before the 50s, going back to what you were saying during the time, where African Americans were supposed to have been illiterate and we're supposed to have been neglective of each other, well, during the time of Black Wall Street, and this was during the time of segregation, black communities, and started with the Greenwood Business District. The Greenwood Business District showed this country what it was like of black folks was rich because those folks was filthy rich. And but from the huge power that they built, not only did they have their own advanced city, the Greenwood Business District ran from 1st Street, and for 50 square blocks, you had some of the richest businesses in this country. And not only did they have the businesses, but they had their own airports. So when they got with our mathematicians and our advanced scholars such as Booker T. Washington and all of Booker T. Washington's associates who built all of those colleges in the South, and not only built all the colleges, but like you said, when you grew up, there was a bank in your community. During the time, we had banks in every black community all the way from Texas all the way up to New York and spreading as far west as Ohio, Detroit, Chicago, as far as Missouri. And this is how the black migration started, was because these black communities in charge of their own finance, and that means that our churches, everyone in our communities, because of segregation, we kept our monies in our communities, but those monies were circulating and building our communities as to where monies would stay into our communities for a period of 4 months before it would go on the outside of our community. So every Sunday, when the churches would deposit their monies into our banks, into the black banks that we own, those banks was able to distributed monies, and the Eagle was able to fly around our communities all the way from Texas to New York and all the other states that I mentioned, that eagle was flying, and it flew all the time for 4 months until any monies went on the outside of our communities. So, again, history shows that during the time of segregation, the black community was the richest communities at any point in our history. We was never as rich during the time of after segregation, during the time of integration, as we were during the time of segregation. During the time of segregation, when you mentioned organizations like Marcus Garvey, Marcus Garvey borrowed his money from the Black Belt. When you mention the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and all of the Cotton Club and anything that had to do with any banks, insurance companies, all of these monies came from the Black Belt, and which we are trying to reincorporate today. We are the Black Belt now. We're bringing it back. But it was during those times that we was a very rich and established community. But what destroyed that wasn't necessarily the destruction of the Greenwood Business District. The destruction of the Black Belt was destroyed from integration. When the white man said you could come and live with us and you can become a part of our community, that's when the black man's economics, and that's when the black man's dignity, and that's when the black man's devalues was destroyed. And today we can see the evidence of that destruction, because, again,
yeah,
we don't own nothing today. That's what I mean. Our communities are on life support because we do not have business and we do not have economical growth. And we do not have banks, and the banks that we do have, they have very few assets. And the reason they have very few assets is because we don't put monies into these black banks that exist today. And the ones that we lost because we went to a white banks and we went to an integrated community. So the federal government, the FDIC, the federal government is against you. The federal government is still segregating against you, just like they did during the Civil War, and that's why we had a Civil War, is because of how valuable we are as a commodity to this country. We're not a peoples to this country. We are a commodity to white folks, and we're going to continue to be a commodity as long as we are trillions of dollars.
Yeah, that's true.
Go right ahead, Sister Williams.
Yes, sir, Brother Bilal. You said you don't know the power of the words.
He said the words. I will tell you, the last time I saw you, You said if there's anything I can do for you, and I told you, I said I just want your knowledge. The last time I saw you face to face, you said, man, if there's anything I do for you, I said all I want is your knowledge. Remember that? When I got in my car and I was leaving, I said all I want is and what you're giving me. I said, that's all I want. I want that. That's what I want from you.
Well, let me say this, Brother Damon, if that's your name. I hope I'm not mispronouncing anything.
Seriously, no, that's my name.
I applaud, brother, what you have brought to this program to date. It is that type of dialogue. Is that those types of questions, those type of challenges, all of the above, man, I'm telling you, as a whole, it makes us all better. If we don't take, you know, the unfortunate thing with a lot of our people at times is even in small areas where we disagree, people fight. But I'm telling you, brother, continue to come on this show and bring what you brought today. Encourage other people to come on, young colleagues that you know who think like you, who don't think like you. We need more people to know that this show is going on every Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And our communities need more of this dialogue so that we can get more done. Because we always talk about things, but as you stated, man, it's time to move now. So I just want to applaud you for what you brought to the program, brother.
I applaud my brother, for my uncle, for, you know, bringing, you know, he will lay it down, the history. He brings down the history, and I just love his history, and he brings it down because he's been around the finance game for a long time, and I've always respected him, and I love him, and he knows it. He knows how much I respect and love him, so, you know, he knows. And so, without me, he is always here. So, you know, and I will come again, but I gotta come back up to visit you again, man. I gotta come and see you again.
Well, you
but,
know,
is this the E-man from Dover, from Delaware? is he still on the phone?
Brother, that knowledge is like, and I'm gonna bring one of the young ones with me the next time I come. I'm gonna bring a young one with me.
Yeah,
so.
Brother Bilal.
Yeah.
Is the E-man from Dover still on the phone? Is he on the call?
Yes, Brother Rashid is on.
Yes, brother. The first night that I met you on the call, you did a poem. And I wasn't able to tell you how much I appreciated every word you said. That was beautiful. It's late coming, but I hope you appreciate what I'm saying. That was a beautiful poem, and the words you shared with us will remain on my heart forever. Also, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, let us remember what Damon said about the church association. So when we everybody had something to say that we can extrapolate something from it. The young man said about the church associations, let's keep that in mind. Thank you, and love you guys, and appreciate the opportunity for sharing.
Thanks so much, Sister. Director at Oklahoma. Brothers and sisters, this is what this show is all about, is network marketing and business identification and communications and business. Because in the African-American community, we have many, many organizations, but every African-American community that I look into, I don't hear anything about business meetings, business associations in your community. So every community, you should have your PTS, your PTA, and your social environments, or church environments, your Mass Jets environments, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. But you also should have a business association. You need to have a business association so you can discuss how do we grow our community, whether your community is large or whether it's a small community. It is still a community, and a community is the citizens' concern. And but you can't have concerns that would be valuable unless you have business concerns. And so you must have business associations and business meetings in your communities. We're coming to about five more minutes. Our mics are still open, and we want to give anyone else who have any comments, we still have time. Our mics are open.
I want to thank, this is Brother Nadir in Delaware. Thank you, my sister. I'm humbled by your kind words about the poem. Yeah, I'm a poet, man. I have a book called Poetry in Motion. From time to time, I said I'll always get on here and at least throw one or two out just to make us think a little bit. And you inspire me to shoot you with another one if I can shoot it to him quick, Brother Bilal.
Go right here, Brother.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Have a hush.
This poem is, and I'm going to ask everybody to mute so you don't have any feedback. This poem is called Am I Still Dreaming? I woke up from a deep sleep. I couldn't even think because my nightmare was too deep. I saw brothers killing brothers and babies cursing out their mothers. I'm glad it was just a dream. I saw brothers dropping out of school, hanging and slinging on the corner thinking it was cool. I wiped tears from their mother's eyes, trying to erase the tragedy of the drive-bys. Man, I'm glad it was only a dream. Starved minds wouldn't eat, didn't want to feed. Graduating from high school, unable to read. Young, jobless brothers drove the fancy cars, only later to dwell in the home of the prison bars. Is this reality, or am I still dreaming?
Now,
I wrote that poem when I was 12 in 1982.
Something. Oh,
and it's amazing
how
time goes back around that something in 1982 is just as real today as it was back then. So, like I say, from time to time, I'll throw some of my poems out.
I
wouldn't
mind having to.
That's something go with the last poets, my brother.
Say again? Oh, yeah, you can get it. My book is called Poetry in Motion. It's a book you can get off of Amazon. It's called Poetry in Motion. And look up Nadir, N-A-D-I-R, Rashid, R-A-S-H-E-E-D.
Yes, sir.
It's called Poetry in Motion, and it's by Nadir, N-A-D-I-R, Rashid, R-A-S-H-E-E-D. I always challenge people to buy the book. I have an Audible version as well. I wasn't as pleased with it because they told me to tone my excitement down. But the book, if you read the words, man, the words will move you more than me speaking.
Yeah, but you know what? You're not supposed to tone your excitement down.
That's right.
There was another artist who did her book. What's her name? She was like, I'm not going to tone it down. She was on thing. I forgot where she was. She said, I can't tone it down because this is real for me. I can't tone it down. And her audible went up.
We're going
to so if
down.
It's real for you, it's real for
we
you.
Have to,
you know what I'm saying?
We have to close down. We have to close down. But next week at the same time, bring this excitement right back on. Like I said, every Wednesday from 7 to 9, New Africa Black Belt Blog Talk Radio.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?